Phoenix, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 bazillion degrees Kelvin height to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Daryl? Can you feel it?
I really feel it, Lou. That's awesome.
Excellent, excellent. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So anyway, I am Lou, and I'm talking with Daryl Becker, who is fiend phoning it in from Hawaii. And this is the first time we've spoken in a really, 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 really long time. We met at Porkfest 2016.
We haven't spoken in 14 months.
It's certainly been a while, but I tell you what, it is good to have you here. When Michael asked me if you'd be a good addition, I says, bleep yeah, and finally got you here. I've been hounding you for all this time to come on to a Wednesday night, and finally got you here, so welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I took time out from my usual Wednesday to join you on this show, because this is what I've been wanting for a while. Is I want to do shows with all the fiends.
All the fiends, yes.
Well, at least, well, but definitely you over and over if I can, you know. So, you know, that sounds like I've got some preferences or something.
Well, the cyber door is always open to you. I had a blast with you at Porkfest. What's the name of that show that we did from there?
We did the Dawn of Freedom, and the whole show, I was there for the entire show, which started pretty much close to midnight and went all the way till approximately about 9 a.m. when the next person took over the show.
I think Ernie came in to do his show.
Exactly. Ernie Hancock, declare your independence. Yeah.
Yeah. So I declared my sleepiness shortly after sunrise, which in New Hampshire, because of where it falls on the Eastern time zone, was about 4:30 in the morning, it seemed like. Which is kind of how it is here too, because I live so close to the time zone line of Central time zone that I run into that same situation of the very early sunrises and then the very early sunsets. As example, it gets dark here by 8:30. It's already dark completely. You know, you can forget about being able to read the newspaper or magazine out on the front porch or anything like that. That's how dark it is. Yeah, if you're a dork reading the newspaper at 8:30 at night, it's dark. But anyway, I can drive about 45 minutes and be back in the Eastern time zone. And I can read the newspaper, the magazine, until about 9:15, 9:30 at night.
That's pretty confusing. And yet, at the same time, imagine if you were in China. The whole thing is one time zone.
Is it?
Yeah, and you know how big it is, right?
Like, yeah, well, I know that Russia or the old Soviet Union covered at least 12 time zones. It may have been more.
I believe it's 15, but I could be wrong on that. Anyone out there, can you look us up? And then you're welcome to not call in, because this is not a call-in show. You know?
Yeah, maybe somebody.
You can keep it to yourself and just pound your fist against your Chevy truck right now, saying, you're wrong! It's 14 time zones in USSR.
Yeah, maybe somebody from the SVR is listening and monitoring, and they'll send an email to Michael or something like that. But anyway, so what's new and exciting in the world of crypto? We were kind of chatting about it for a minute before we got started. So what's going on? You'd mentioned a couple things.
Well, here's something new. The beginning of this year, January, cryptocurrency finally passed $1,000 and stayed there. And then it went to $2,000. And then
okay, now what does that mean? What does that mean? Are you talking about Bitcoin?
Valued. Okay. Yeah, each value. Yeah, I mean, there's other things that happened too, but I was leading up to that. So that's kind of important, just to like context for a moment, you know. And then, like, okay, right now, present day value, that. I was just flipping to it on my phone. Looks like one Bitcoin today, at this moment, is generally valued at $6,134.
I'm going to take my quarter Bitcoin and retire to Mexico.
Well, I would say hold on to it or hold on for dear life. HODL. Or HODL. Yeah, I'm doing a lot of hodling right now when I possibly can. But so that's one thing. What also happened was August 1st. This fork happened. So anyone who has any amount of Bitcoin before the fork will automatically, if you know the doodads to do on your exchanges or in your private wallet. And by the way, you know, I guess I could, if you pay me, I would help you do this, but you can claim Bitcoin Cash, another currency. So right now, one Bitcoin Cash, which you automatically, so let's just say, you said quarter Bitcoin, then you'd own a quarter Bitcoin Cash. One Bitcoin Cash is worth $662 right now.
Okay.
So now, you can do the math on that.
Hasn't the Bitcoin Cash been fluctuating kind of wildly?
Not that
Bitcoin itself doesn't, but
yeah, it skyrocketed to around 700, then it dipped down to under 200, and then it slowly rose again to 300, and like I said, now it's 665 right now. So, yeah, it does. These are volatile currencies, which if you can't take your heart racing from looking at what your portfolio looks like at this moment, you're probably not right for crypto.
But the thing to remember is if it's steady and not changing, it means nothing is happening.
That's true. That would be like Dogecoin, which is an interesting example of an S coin or crap coin.
is S stable at zero?
S stable at zero? That's an interesting question. Please ask it to me again, but maybe with different words.
Is the stability of Dogecoin at the $0 level?
No, it's definitely more than zero. You could still be...
How much more?
Plenty more.
Is it denominated in dog memes?
I'm like, I have to scroll all the way down to find... there it is.
okay. The smallest denomination
0.001, of Bitcoin, you know, dollars. Per Doge.
Okay. So the smallest denomination of a Bitcoin is Satoshis. Is the smallest denomination of a Dogecoin like a Fido or something like that?
I hope so. Or maybe a Shiba. The animal. You know, it's one of those things. But yeah, if you don't understand why cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin matter, well, I'm not going to explain it to you for free. But I'm also not going to take up your time.
Where can they go to find out?
You know, I like Coindesk.com. Like Coindesk.com. I like to just go there. I also like 99Bitcoins. That whole .com is all missioned with trying to make cryptocurrency understandable. That one's really good for that, actually. They both have like both understandable parts, and then they would have more advanced news kind of things, like how anyone who had Bitcoin before August 1st now suddenly owns a new currency as well, if they just understand the mechanism of claiming it. That's interesting. It's especially interesting if you were someone who owned, like, say, 12 Bitcoin or 200 Bitcoin, you know, then you own that much of that other currency as well, and it's worth your time to do something. So those are two sites you can learn all about those kinds of things. Yeah. And you got a search engine, right? I'm assuming anyone listening to us is at least slightly understanding that computers exist and search engines serve you, maybe. Or you could use the wrong search engine and then search engine searches you, you know?
One of the things, looking back at the history of Bitcoin, and I've only been into Bitcoin for maybe 2 years now, and I'm not a hardcore aficionado. I have a little bit of Bitcoin. If somebody asks me what is Bitcoin, or somebody that's never heard of it before asks me what it is, then I can give them a brief little explanation, but I can't go into any great detail or give a giant presentation on it. But interestingly enough, if you look at right now, it's over 4,000. I think it topped out at 4,400 like a week or two ago, something like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant. It's not that long ago that it reached parity with gold, meaning that the one Bitcoin had the same value as a troy ounce of gold. And then before that, the previous milestone had been reaching parity with silver, and of course reaching parity with the U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve note. But I believe the original purchase made with Bitcoin, the first transaction that occurred, was supposedly a pizza for 30,000 Bitcoin.
I think it was two pizzas for 30,000, each pizza being 15,000 Bitcoin.
Oh, okay. All right, so two for Tuesday. But I think about this. If you had sold that pizza for 30,000, or those two pizzas for 30,000 Bitcoin, and you hodled that 30,000 Bitcoin, what the value would be today at 4,100 apiece?
Oh, there's a math question. It's definitely into the hundreds of millions of dollars, like more than 100 million, I think.
And the thing is, that wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't.
I know.
I listened to the wrong podcasts, Lou. The ones that had warnings of, I don't understand how this works. This can't be safe. This can't go anywhere. I listened to someone on the Corbett Report saying such things. And so I held back for a couple of years too long. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. The FUD, you know?
Mm-hmm.
that's an obstacle.
I had a lack of curiosity about these things because when did I first hear about it? It was maybe sometime in 2011, possibly early 2012, but most likely sometime in 2011. And I don't know how long Bitcoin had been around at the time. When was it that the white paper was released? Wasn't that in 2009, or was it earlier?
It was actually, I believe it was 2008, and then the architecture, the actual, like, I guess, intra-web structure was set out in 2009.
Okay.
Activated.
All right. We'll talk about this a little bit more when we come back. It's going to be interesting.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android worms.
Freedom Fiends.
Oh
yeah, we are. Yeah, we are back. So we're talking about milestones of the cryptocurrencies, and particularly Bitcoin. And it wasn't that long ago that these things came about, and now here you have these coins. You know, the Bitcoin is valued at over $4,000 each. What that means is, when I first got my Bitcoin, one Bitcoin would only buy about, I don't know, maybe $400 at the time. And now the U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve note, is on sale, because now you can take that one Bitcoin and buy 4,100 of those Federal Reserve notes.
Or more. That, if you go to Asian markets, then you can command more in the realm of 6,000 U.S. dollars per Bitcoin.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
Now, that's what people do, apparently, is if you have the ability to get in on those markets over there, it's much more expensive over there. As you can imagine, any place where you have some types of potential problems or restrictions, things or possibly regulations or things like all the articles that you sent me, there's going to create those obstacles, and those obstacles artificially create scarcity, which raises the price. Mm-hmm. But here in the good old USA... an honest Bitcoin is worth $41.52 on my little ticker here.
Yeah, but the good news is, if history has taught us anything, government prohibition actually guarantees that there will be a supply, even though it may be artificially scarce. There will be a pretty steady supply. Government stomping out things that it doesn't like is rather farcical. It's kind of like the picture of the sidewalk with a gate on it, and then the grass right next to it is ungated. There's no gate to stop you. So you see these trails walking on either side of the gate along the sidewalk. And that's government stopping things from happening.
It definitely is when it comes to cryptocurrency. You can walk right around that.
Or everything else.
Yeah, every single type of prohibition. You know what I think prohibitions are, Lou? Is that I think it's a way that basically this military gangster-controlled world can turn a commodity into a super currency that only specialized people are able to contain and hold and trade. You know, like the drug market, basically. They just basically took a medicine and they turned it into a super commodity that could now be valued at much higher levels than it ever was before. And then, of course, the only people who can move it with impunity are military people or, I would say, extremely powerful government people. Something like that.
Well, the war on drugs is called No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind. Because ultimately, it is a welfare program for both cops and cartels.
That really opened up the empathy I have now for these poor cartel owners and how much they struggle with, you know, the having to look like it's a struggle. They struggle with making it look like a struggle. That's what I mean. You know,
their struggle is real, bro. It's real. So anyway,
yeah.
So, going back to crypto for a minute, in the USSA, there's not a whole heck of a lot of restrictions on there. And why do you think that is? Do you think it's they don't know how to restrict it, or do you think they're kind of curious to see what happens next? What do you think? Because the USSA government has been rather laissez-faire and hands-off regarding cryptocurrency. What do you think is up with that?
You really want to know what I think? Okay. What I think, Lou, is that all of these tax farms that people look at and are really tax farms, but people call countries, and that people think about are separate, but, you know, in all intents and purposes, they all fleece the people within those farms, within those, you know, geographic designations. So there are experiments within certain tax farms to make certain things extremely legal and certain things to be extremely illegal. And then they sort of set back and look and see how that does for the market. So anywhere where you have things become illegal, there was a period of time where in Russia to own Bitcoin or trade Bitcoin or sell in Bitcoin was illegal. And they see how that played out, that which is going away soon. And there are certain countries where it was made illegal. There's even certain states where it's made prohibitively expensive for certain companies that try to sell cryptocurrency just to trade in. So what they all are doing is they all met in some Bilderberg type group and designated some years ago which ones would make it free and which ones would make it restricted, and they see how it plays out, and they reap the benefits basically like that.
Not quite sure if I could buy into all of that, but we can find out.
Allegedly.
If we can come back. Not a guarantee. We will be back. That is mostly guaranteed.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Bad Fiends. Oh yeah, Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I am here with Daryl. And we are talking about whether the lizard people are orchestrating the cryptocurrency takeover of the world and prostitution. So, to reiterate your position again, Daryl, and I'll let you do it, but are you saying that you think that maybe some of these central planners get together and they have their little gang of commissars that get together on the central planning committee and say, okay, this is what we're going to do here, there, and everywhere else?
I think that's just good business. If you have lots of power, you get together. I think that this is a military-controlled world. And I think people get together who have lots of power and influence and control, highest levels of military, financial, and logistical controls, and they say, we're going to make these things legal over here and these things illegal over there, and they have a plan for how it all flows out, because as you know, this is one of the first articles you sent me. If you constrain a society too much with too much regulation, too much government control, then all innovation and creativity and actual powerful economic activity ceases. It starts to slow down to nothing. It turns into Venezuela. It turns into
North Korea.
Or a war-torn Somalia of that type of thing. It's just like, you know, when people are under duress and stress, they don't produce, they don't innovate, they don't keep creating. So they make these artificial scarcity pockets where they say, you can't have these things, do these things, exercise these things unless you get, you know, these permits, regulations, permissions, etc., some of which are so expensive that you may as well be your own country or a military to purchase. And that's the way it goes. I mean, until a country finds out that if it misses the cryptocurrency boat, like Russia did realize recently, it better change its policies on that, because it would be more lucrative to be more free-flowing and less lucrative to be more restrictive. But you look around the world, take any topic, whether it's prostitution or cryptocurrency or any type of intoxicant drug, and look at the regulations. You can basically map the world this way, and you can see that the central planners did map the world this way, and it looks like it was done intelligently, Lou. So it's my speculation, but caveat emptor. Buyer beware. You don't have to believe what I'm saying. I don't know. Look, do your own research. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to say that is what you're suggesting does sound plausible. However, I do have a couple little concerns in here. Now, I'm sure that the control freaks and all of their control freakiness would absolutely love nothing more than to be able to go and centrally plan and control the whole world. Now, I personally think that maybe these little small groups that control everything, maybe not so much. Let's take prostitution, for example. Over in Europe, prostitution is legal. They do have the red light districts there. It's very controlled and everything else. But over here in the USSA, it's not legal, except for some minor Nevada. But for the most part, prostitution is completely illegal. Forget about it. Go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Pay the fine because the city needs revenue. If you look at that, what you have to ask is, why is it illegal in the U.S. but not in the Europe? And my personal belief on this, and I think this is a pretty strong answer to it, is if you look at a lot of the stuff that's gone on through the history of the USSA as far as the different types of laws go, it really goes back to the Puritan era, back in the 1600s. And the Puritans were the religious fanatics that left Europe to be free to persecute others for their religion. And I guess the best way to put it would be, a Puritan is somebody that is absolutely bedeviled that somebody out there, somewhere, might be happy. And they had this belief that you had to suffer through every second of your life here on Earth, and that you would actually get happiness when you die and go to heaven and go to the next world and everything else. But this world had to just absolutely suck lemons the whole time you're here. If you're having fun, that could take away your chances of having fun in the afterworld. That's how messed up they are. And a lot of the Puritan influence has lasted even through the centuries. I mean, granted, witches aren't being burned anymore. They've kind of drifted away from that, but the Puritan influence is alive and strong. Now, as far as these central planning committees go, the argument that you've made is that socialism, state socialism, can work because state socialism is based upon a central planning and control of the means of production. And people could call it a conspiracy theory that all these things are happening. And Rothbard has a quote that I do like. He says, "I don't believe in conspiracy theories, but conspiracies are happening left and right, mostly on the left." But the big thing about grand conspiracies, it requires grand conspirators. And the grand conspirators are the people that would have to have this special knowledge or the pretense of knowledge, as F.A. Hayek had wrote about. And they would have to have all this special knowledge to understand what's going on and process all these millions of pieces of information that are happening in real time and also be able to predict the future. So I'm going to say that even though I'm sure there are control freaks and there are control freakiness out there that would love to have this happen, I don't really think that's working out that way.
Okay, how do you think it's working?
Well, one, I do believe that there are people that are trying to control things, but I do believe that there's a spontaneous order that comes about because what's that old joke? I told God I had a plan and he laughed at me. A lot of these central planners will say, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. This is what we want. This is what we want to do, people to do. And the people are going to say, you know what? No. I mean, because if you take prohibition not just of alcohol, but also of cannabis and everything else, the government has said, no, you can't do this. And the population has said, yes, we can. And if you look at how prohibition ended, the cartoon version that you get in the schools is that, well, the government decided maybe this wasn't such a good idea, and in order to restore freedom, the freedom loving FDR campaigned as the wet candidate, and he says, "I will restore your freedom to you by giving you permission to drink alcohol, so long as you pay the tax." And that's really not how it worked. Most people don't know that prohibition ended in 10 states prior to the federal repeal of prohibition, New York State being one of them. And the reason that it was nullified at the state level or ended at the state level was because you had all these cops going out and arresting people, and you had all these juries refusing to convict, which is kind of what's happening with cannabis right now, particularly medical cannabis. So what you had was they were getting beat up. They were losing in court on a regular basis. They were losing in court enough to where they took notice of it. Because prosecutors are going to lose a case. That's a given. Nobody wins them all. You can't win them all. But when you start losing more and more, and all those losses make the prosecutors and the government itself look incompetent, how could you not get a conviction of this person that was caught red-handed? Maybe they even confessed in an interrogation, and you still couldn't get a conviction. Well, the jury didn't see it that way. The jury nullified. The jury chose to go with their conscience rather than the law. So, in other words, the jury disobeyed the law just like the defendant did. Well, what are we going to do about this? We can't have them make us look stupid. Well, gee, maybe we need to change the laws and follow the trend and then take credit for that trend by saying, hey, we're going to restore freedom, or we're going to provide you the choice that you should have always had. And this prohibition that we had, be it alcohol or cannabis or gold ownership. That was an error in judgment that needed to be rectified, and we're here to rectify it because we care this much about your freedom. Because you know what? Our daddies and granddaddies died for that flag so that you could pay taxes to smoke cannabis and drink alcohol and have
and shoot
gold.
Off fireworks
and shoot off Chinese fireworks to celebrate our independence from England.
While waving a flag made in China. And
provided
you
that
know,
you have the provided that you have a permit and follow all your local rules, regulations, ordinances, commands, threats of violence, edicts, declarations, and orders.
Now, Lou, I'm having a hard time having sympathy now for the Fondling Fathers. I'm having a hard time empathizing with these people who seem to set up such gangster situations for people that affects me and you. I guess that's because I care about me and you. So,
well, maybe you're seeing through the facade. But I mean, going back to the original point, though, what you see is the controllers are calling for the direction to go one way, and the response is, no, we want to go a different direction. And quite frankly, what's the Victor Hugo quote? No army can stop an idea whose time has come. Quite frankly, when you get enough people of the mind that they're going to do this or they're going to do that, you're not going to stop them with any amount of declarations. And the Soviet Union and East Germany, well, the whole Iron Curtain is a prime example of it. Capitalism, you know, this buying and selling and private ownership of means of productions and all this other stuff was outlawed. As a matter of fact, they had imposed the death penalty for certain economic crimes, which they referred to as creeping capitalism, meaning the black markets. It was just really amazing because you had 20% of the Soviet economy was admitted to be verified black and gray markets.
Oh yeah.
So
at least
it's not just drugs and hookers. It's food. It's medication. It's consumer goods. It's basic staples of survival.
What is the size of the market capitalization size of the black market of the world right now? I think it passed 10 trillion.
I don't know the actual dollar amount, but I think some of the, like the World Bank and other state-face type organizations have estimated that it's probably somewhere maybe between 20 and 30% verified, at least 20% verified.
So when we come back, we can go into that.
Yes.
Maybe.
Freedom guarantee.
Allegedly.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
And we are back.
Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, this is Lou. I'm joined by Daryl. And we're talking about the worldwide black markets. And not just the black markets, not just the hookers and blow, but the gray markets. The gray markets being the unregulated, capitalistic type stuff. And in the Soviet Union, you had these, well, all, all socialist countries, including modern day Venezuela, you have these gray markets of people there. They're operating outside of the normal government restrictive channels, and they're moving product and getting it to people. And this product isn't necessarily the illicit items, you know, like the hookers and blow, but it's more the food items, the medicines, the basic staples for survival, and then also some of the consumer commodities that the people listening to the show on their chrome robot turds are going to take for granted every day, because it's something that they reach, and they have all this stuff there. And you reach in one direction, you got a big screen TV. You reach in another direction, you got a laptop. You reach in another direction, you got a Cuisinart, and you got all this stuff. And even the lower middle class folks here, they have stuff that the rich in many of these countries can only dream about, because they just don't have the type of access to it. But the black and gray markets are what gets the stuff there. So before we went to break, we were talking about I believe it's the World Bank or some other state-owned, state-face type group. I think they had verified that about 20% of the world's economy is verified black and gray market.
And I was been trying to look this up to corroborate what Lou just said, and that is the challenge sometimes, because instead of actually looking things up and being all prepared for this show, me and Lou actually, we've missed each other, so we just talk personal things during the breaks instead of actually going through all of that. So I would love to be prepared with the precise answers and logistical statistics, but I'm not. I just know that it's trillions of dollars, and I'll make this claim again, because just to say again, when these governments make these items suddenly anything, whether it's a type of, I would say, narcotic type of medicine, that's not just medicines, or whether it's a cryptocurrency, or whether it's a certain action, such as having sex without a camera running, and the licenses, and all the paperwork going done, you know? Because, you know, if you have sex while cameras are running, well, you know, then it's legal. But if you don't have, if I can't watch it and get off on it, yeah, then, you know, I don't want it legal in my state if I can't rewatch it and get off on it. But, you know, but if someone was paid for the whole thing and I can watch it, well, then that's okay. So anyway, what that turns is it turns into services and goods into super commodities. And I would say that the worldwide black market of, I would say, made illicit type items or services, it would constitute as all this money that I would say probably gets into military and high-level financial hands to some degree, being used to fund ? And that's my claim. And of course, I could be wrong. Underground facilities, maybe?
Well, maybe. What do you think? Yeah, what all do you think the question mark could be? I mean, other than underground facilities.
High-level technology. I would say, like, for the last, go back to, you said FDR, and that's where prohibitions, where it's like, we repeal prohibition, we give you the right to drink your beer, thank you, and then just hyper-regulate it, so they're siphoning as much money from that as possible, sort of giving everyone a bone,
and we have then, given you, we have returned your God-given rights to you, so long as you pay our tax.
Oh, sorry, my kitty was just eating my food.
Oh, man. Bad kitty. Bad kitty.
Licking my food. Not eating my food. Just licking it. Oh, bummer.
Did your kitty look up and say, my germs now. My germs. My germs.
She looked at, like, said, why did you move this away from me?
As far as the nefarious purposes of why would governments do this stuff, why would they tax a living daylight of it? I personally lean towards they finance their operation, and then of course we got to think about good old fashioned graft.
It makes money to pay off the people.
Yeah, because
you need to pay off.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to skim off of there when you got a lot more money. But anyway. We will be back in the second hour, and we might even be on, like, some scheduled topics, because this whole first hour just kind of popped up out of, we're going to do, like, the first segment intro and just some useless banter back and forth, and it went for an entire hour.
Freedom Fiends.
That's why I like having you here, Daryl. We'll be back.
That's why we'll be back.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
So, here we go.
Freedom Fiends.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Camp's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region, beating the non-aggression principle into recovering status. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, welcome back. I am Lou, and I am joined tonight by Daryl.
Ah, awesome to be with you, Lou.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. As we were mentioning last hour, it's been so long since we've spoken. We actually met at Porkfest a couple years ago, and that was a hoot.
It was great. Though it was 2016, so just going to want to not misrepresent myself.
Yes, 2016. So, I guess now we're going to start getting into actual articles. We spent the first hour talking about cryptocurrency, black markets, and how basically governments can't stop anything. Here's a good way of doing this. You got one cryptocurrency talking to another cryptocurrency, and the first cryptocurrency says, "Hey, governments are going to regulate us and put us out of business." And the other cryptocurrency says, "Oh yeah, hold my beer, watch this." It goes and runs wild. So I guess that's the explanation for it. So anyway, first article that we're going to cover tonight, and this comes to us from independent.org and from Dr. Robert Higgs. And the title of it is "Once More with Feeling: Our System is Not Socialism, but Participatory Fascism." And he starts off with, "I continue to encounter many discussions in which the author or speaker bemoans the economic order's drift towards socialism, or in some cases, its actual existence as such. If this characterization were simply a matter of linguistic imprecision, it might not matter much, but it is much more than a matter of terminology, because one's understanding of the nature of our current economic order hinges on how we characterize it. Socialism is a system in which all the major means of production are owned and operated by the state. Except perhaps for small firms or farms, all productive enterprises are state enterprises." Now, back in the Soviet Union, they had the collective farms, and they found that the production levels was pretty low on the collective farms, and they eventually started letting people keep more of what they produced, because as it was working out, everybody was growing for the sake of the collective, for the Soviet Empire, and people weren't working for themselves at all. And they found that when people had an ownership stake in the means of production and they could actually get value out of it for themselves, that's when productivity increased. And there's numerous stories about this. Siberia, the great resource wasteland, they used to pay people ungodly amounts of money and give them special things. I mean, they'd provide free airfare and extra vacation time to them. They would pay them up to, I think I saw like 4.4 times the total rate after like 2 years, or the normal rate that a worker would get. I just all different things. You could, if you had a an apartment in a closed city, meaning you had to have special permission to live and work there. So I'm not sure if Moscow was like that, but what's the big city in Ukraine?
Odessa.
I'm drawing a blank on it. No.
Not Odessa.
No, maybe it's Kiev. Capital city. I don't know. Yeah, Kiev. Like Kiev, and then like I said, I'm not sure about Moscow, but anyway, there were some that were closed cities. You could actually keep your apartment there. Now, not that anybody owned an apartment. You could also get a vehicle in a fraction of the time, and you could knock the wait time down to like 6 months to get a vehicle, because you would get put ahead on like the seniority list for it. So even the Soviets realized that that personal gain helps to make communism work a little bit better. Or actually, they started engaging in more capitalistic ventures themselves. But anyway.
So this article by Robert Higgs, it has lots of little excellent paragraphs. And I love listening to you read it because by the way, everyone else listening better love listening to Lou's voice because it's awesome. But that's what I'm my plug for your voice. But besides that, it's not just your intonation of it. Specifically, the words that Higgs came up with for this one, they're great. Do you want to continue or go to some of your favorite parts?
Let's hear what you really like, because you haven't told me yet which ones you like.
What I really like is...
Well, hang on. Let me finish the paragraph that I was doing. So anyway,
there you go.
Socialism is a system in which all major means of production are owned and operated by the state, blah, blah, blah. All productive enterprises are state enterprises. All natural resources belong to the state. So kind of like how you have to go get a fishing license here. You have to have a permit to go out on this unknown property. But anyway, all resources are allocated and employed as the state dictates. Insofar as it dictates, can actually be carried out in practice. All such systems display much slack between orders given and actual conduct on the ground, owing to corruption and attempts to fix flaws embedded in the state's overall plan. So anyway, let's go to something that you really appreciate and let's talk about it.
Well, what we were talking about before was what prohibition does, or what I would say, keep this in mind. Regulations that make a barrier to entry or make it expensive to enter a particular business or service or providing certain types of goods. The same thing as the king says that only his nephew is allowed to make and sell candles. No one else has the permission besides the king's nephew to make candles. It's the same exact thing as the regulations to enter an industry. It's a barrier to entry, and it's called rent-seeking behavior and regulatory capture. Regulatory capture is a Wikipedia page. So my favorite part is...
How dare that Robin Hood kill the king's deer?
Right, like that, exactly. So it goes like these two. If it pleases the crown, these two paragraphs. For the rulers, participatory fascism, that's the specific situation of this level of a mixed economy, so-called, where, you know, innovation is allowed to happen periodically, and then the regulations squeeze the number of businesses down to a small minimum until it becomes too restrictive, and then they release their squeeze periodically. Just to say again, participatory fascism is the perfect solution towards which these rulers have been groping for generations. I added rulers. And virtually all of the world's politico-economic orders are now gravitating towards this system. See, outright socialism is a recipe for widespread poverty and for the ultimate dissolution of the economy and the disavowal of its political leadership. Socialism is the wave of the past. Everywhere it has been tried seriously, it has failed miserably. I put failed in quotes, by the way. Participatory fascism, in contrast, has two decisive advantages over socialism. First, it allows the nominal private owners of resources and firms enough room to maneuver that they can still innovate and prosper and hence propel the system towards higher levels of living for the masses. If the government's intervention is pushed too far, that's regulation, hyper-regulation, basically, once again, the king's nephew kind of thing, the progress slows. Exactly. And then it might eventually cease or even turn into an economic regress, you know, going back to the Stone Age. No one has electricity here. However, When such untoward conditions occur, the rulers tend to rein in their plunder and intervention enough to allow a revitalization of the economy. This is my favorite paragraph. Of course, such fettered economies cannot grow as fast as completely free economies can grow. But the latter system would preclude the plunder and control that the political leaders now enjoy in the fettered system, and hence they greatly prefer the slower-growing great plunder system to the faster-growing no-plunder one. And that's what's been going on, in my opinion. Just my opinion.
I will agree with your opinion on this matter.
Oh, because in this case.
Well, if you look at it, Jefferson has a quote, and along these lines, it is the nature of government to grow and for liberty to decrease. If you change that around, it is the nature of government to grow and to consume more resources until nothing else remains. And that has been the history of government. The Soviet Union is an example of government, you know, peak government, I guess. Particularly when you throw in all the dead bodies out of the gulags there, and government operates exactly like a parasite, and it is very parasitic in nature, because it has to exist off of other labor. I mean, government doesn't manufacture a product and sell it and compete on the open market. Governments make their money through taxes,
but they provide so many services, Lou. So much welfare and good deeds and grants.
Well, okay.
Or maybe they don't, really.
What's the word that I'm looking for? I got it. Here it is. Here it is. No, they don't. Anyway. No.
Thank you for that.
So, I mean, it's not like an auto manufacturer or a pizzeria that they produce something that they sell and people rush in to buy it and they get on a waiting list if they're in the Soviet Union, you know, for either a car or a pizza. And it's a difference between the voluntary economy and then the coercive economy, because as mentioned before, governments do survive on taxes, whereas businesses survive on revenues by people choosing to purchase those products. So because it's done at force and you really have no option in the matter, you can say no to the pizza or the automobile and be like, no, I want to eat healthier or I want to ride a bike. Well, when it comes to government turns into Pauly from Goodfellas. Oh, you don't want to buy this product? Bleep you, pay me. Oh, you think you can find a better deal somewhere else? Bleep you, play me. And so when you have that, and that is the very nature of government and the nature of politicians, the type of people that seek office, is they are parasitic by their nature and they want to plunder others. So we'll be back after a strip to the market and we'll rant and rave a little bit more.
Warps.
That is a guarantee. Unless we get drunk.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends. Helping the helpless. Freedom Fiends. Saving the universe. Freedom Fiends. Doing the things that I've
taken the world from the state. Fighting the forces of hate.
Freedom Fiends. Helping the helpless. Freedom Fiends. Kicking the hornet's nest. Freedom Fiends. Doing the things that I've taken.
Keeping the tasers away. You should be free, not a slave. But you'll hear the truth today. Yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block. For the fiends on the block, ain't never gonna stop in the glass go blow.
Woof, woof.
Meow, meow, meow.
Free fiends.
Oh yeah.
This is Lou.
And that is Daryl, and we're back. So we are talking about, and this is an article from Robert Higgs, who I just think he's like really awesome. I mean, he's a great writer, and even his quips on Facebook are really really neat. Just one heck of a guy and all around sweetheart, except for when he's getting feisty. But anyway, so the title of this article is "Once More with Feeling." Our system is not socialism, but participatory fascism. And to give people a little idea, I do believe fascism falls in the socialism family. Mussolini had described fascism as being the marriage of corporation and state. So it could quite easily be considered like a continuation, the next version of the old British mercantilism.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, because the British mercantilism was a lot of public-private partnerships, meaning a lot of collusion and a lot of protectionism for the politically connected. So, as a matter of fact, Hamilton was quite the mercantilist. And by Hamilton, I'm referring to one of the founding lawyers, Alexander Hamilton. And thank you, Mr. Burr. Had only you been there a few years earlier, things might have been different. But anyway, we're talking about how the U.S. is more the predatory the U.S. government, well, all governments for this matter, are the predatory parasitic parasite that feeds upon the host, being the productive economy. So was there anything else that jumped out at you that we were talking about in the last segment that you wanted to cover?
No, I mean, I think I just covered those two paragraphs. I just really want to emphasize once again that it is the slow or sometimes rapid releasing of regulations and releasing of all the control mechanisms that stifle innovation and creativity and actual productivity of people. That's the part that where like it constricts and people then slow down and can't, like they basically like it's like that thing where I guess the Maasai, where they like actually like cut and take the blood of their cows as part of their produce. The Maasai tribe in Africa. I'm just saying, they've got cows, they take the blood. They can't take too much blood of their cows, because then their cow will literally die, and they certainly won't get any milk either. So they do take to a certain degree. So these governments are periodically using regulations, taxes, and various forms of restriction, are taking, and when they keep taking, if they take too much, then everything slows down to a standstill or worse. And then periodically they reverse that process. And my supposition also,
begrudgingly,
is that there are countries, for example, such as modern-day China, which is an incredible economic power. Right after Mao died, there was an actual interesting situation. You can look up the work of, Kate Xiaozhu, I'm totally butchering her name, but she goes over, this is her PhD doctorate, of exactly how these Chinese farmers, in the wake of Mao's death, saw that the proper way to deal with the situation was to pay off the communist cadres in their specific locality and area, so that they would leave them alone, they would use their excess produce to pay off the cadres, and then take their extra surplus and invest that into land and businesses and buildings and start businesses and things like that. And the entire powerhouse that is modern-day China was not caused by the actual centralized state, not at all. This is at least according to this author that I did meet, by the way. But instead was caused by people who just invested heavily. They just instead of like protesting the local governments, they paid them off. And then they took their surplus and they used the low regulations to create businesses and create like incredible wealth. So when I visited in 1986, I was seeing gym teachers going on vacation. And I was 14 in 1986. So now I dated myself. So there you go.
Interestingly enough, after Mao's demise, and if Mr. Burr had gotten there a little bit earlier too, that would have helped out. Probably would have saved a few million lives. The Chinese government had toyed around with some creeping capitalism of their own, and they had implemented some economic freedom zones. Is that the proper word for them? They had areas where you had, they were pretty much hands-off, very laissez-faire, not quite anarchistic, but people had free run with the economy, and they were able to go wild. Anyway, we'll be back. We'll talk about that more.
We'll be back.
We're looking for Sayakana.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Freedom Fiends.
All right, so I'm making the news ticker sound right now because there's breaking news, and no, you're not going to hear the whoosh because the whoosh is it's bad. It's no good. That's like so like
racist
2000s. Yeah, the whoosh is racist. Everything's racist. So anyway, breaking news. This comes to us from FoxNews.com. Charlottesville rallier Cantwell reportedly surrenders to police. So Christopher Cantwell, one of the faces of white nationalism to emerge from this month's rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, who was wanted by police on several outstanding warrants, reportedly surrendered Wednesday. The 36-year-old Cantwell was prominently featured in Vice News Tonight report on the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, an event that saw the death of 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who was struck by a vehicle that rammed into a crowd of counter-protesters. Cantwell turned himself in to police in Lynchburg, Virginia. Lynchburg, white nationalists, okay. Following several arrest warrants issued by the University of Virginia Police Department in Charlottesville, the UPD said, he was being held at the Blue Ridge Regional Jail in Lynchburg, awaiting transfer to Charlottesville. Cantwell was wanted on 3 felony charges, including 2 counts of the illegal use of tear gas or other gas, and 1 count of malicious body injury with explosive or fire, police said. He reportedly acknowledged using pepper spray August 11th in Charlottesville, but said he was defending himself against a counter-protester, and his other option was knocking out his teeth. Well, that was kind of him. During the Vice documentary, Cantwell said the death of Heyer was more than justified, asserting that the suspect who allegedly deliberately drove into a crowd of people was provoked by stupid animals. He also reiterated that he pepper sprayed a counter demonstrator, saying, "I thought that spraying that guy was the least damaging thing I could do." Cantwell has since faced backlash. Well, actually, walking away probably would have been the least damaging, but
not being there.
it's kind of hard to be a white nationalist threatening people and then walk away. But anyway, Cantwell has since faced backlash from social media sites such as Facebook, Instagram, and dating website OkCupid, all of which terminated his accounts. So,
Plenty of Fish said that they are welcoming Chris Cantwell back with open arms. So,
yeah, I don't think he'll be very successful on J-Date or Black People Meet, though. According to the New York Post, Cantwell later released a video in which he tearfully tells people he is afraid of being arrested. So, and now he has a Wikipedia page, so he has become famous, just like he wanted to.
Now we're mentioning his name on the Freedom Fiends and giving him more attention.
Yeah, he used to be He That Shall Not Be Named.
Wow, that whole Voldemort thing, it's like not saying the N-word. I was just listening to a podcast about that this morning. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, white nationalists, my skin tone is kind of ochre. Am I an ochre nationalist, maybe? I get kind of tan over here.
I don't know. I'm not a nationalist, so...
I'm not really into the nationalist thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't work for me. But anyway.
I'm an ochre individualist.
I am a Heinz 57 American. So anyway, let's get back to this article here from Bob Higgs. And where exactly was it that we left off? I kind of lost track.
Oh, I can get back to it. I read the paragraph about the relaxing and constricting of regulations and things of that nature. All
right. I remember where I wanted to go. The thing about regulators and politicians, and sometimes they are one and the same, is they are very resistant to deregulation. They're resistant to freedom. They do understand that there's times where they have to. Going back to the example of FDR as the wet candidate, it wasn't because he wanted to restore freedom, because he himself was a fascist. But anyway, it was looking at the trend of alcohol prohibition was so unpopular, and that they were losing the war, that they had to find a way to get out of it. So when a politician will support deregulation, and for the most part, the Republican Party, who always talks about less government, they're doing nothing more than paying lip service to that. They don't want less government. They want the same amount of government, but they just want it to look a little bit different. They don't want it to be a full-blown tyranny. They want to call it something else. So the big thing about politicians, though, is they believe government is good. And along with good, they also believe that it is necessary. And what all politicians have in common is they don't believe that the individual can be in charge of themselves. They all believe that there has to be a middleman between each individual and their freedom. And that includes Ron Paul. Because Ron Paul was never willing to let people be 100% free.
No.
I know there's a lot of people there like, oh my God, he didn't just say that. Yeah, I said it. It's true.
Well, you could verify it for yourself if you want to, but this guy is kind of a retired doctor, right? A retired congressman, retired doctor, retired presidential candidate. Still really wants his intellectual property of his ronpaul.com kind of thing. But besides that, you know, this is a person. I like some things Ron Paul did. He definitely added attention span to certain important subjects. It's kind of like Stefan Molyneux. He added attention span to spanking. That was cool. That part, you know.
Yeah,
I can appreciate that.
My biggest complaint about Ron Paul, and this goes for whatever flavor of the month status libertarian out there, whether it's Justin Amash or Massey or Lee or I don't know whoever else they're claiming is the next great libertarian politician. My biggest complaint about them is they give people false hope. They give people false hope that the system is not what it is, and that if only the right people were in charge, and if only the plan were to be followed properly. So in that regard, this belief in this fairy tale is the similarity between constitutionalists and socialists, because they're all relying on just the right people being in charge.
It's like Lucy with the football. This time she's going to hold it and Charlie Brown's going to actually kick it, right? Every single time a politician is like that. Like, I'm not beholden to special interests. I'm for the people. Oh, this is for the people. Like Bane, the character in Batman, you know?
Yeah, or you know, Donald Trump's not a politician. He's going to change things. And the biggest complaint that Democrats have about Trump right now is that he's the one implementing Hillary's policies and not her. He's the one that's warmongering. He's the one that ordered the bombing raids in Syria and ordered troops on the ground. That was supposed to be her country to bomb.
I just don't buy that these presidents are actually in control like people say they are. I just can't buy that. But I mean, if you want to, okay, fine.
I can't buy it. In some regards, yeah. It's in other regards, no. I mean, they are subject to political pressure. I've never said that a president has the absolute power. They're subject to political pressure of, you know, and this might even sound conspiratorial, people that maybe you and I have never even heard of, people that are so wealthy that they're off the charts of the Forbes 500. Who knows?
Exactly. Yeah.
But
those people.
But yeah. The reality is, no amount of money. It's like the Constitution. People say, well, the government's supposed to do this because it's in the Constitution. Well, the Constitution doesn't grant capability, knowledge, or wisdom, and neither does having all this money and being one of these people, these wealthy people that's off the chart of the Forbes 500. And quite frankly, if they are so wealthy, powerful, and knowledgeable, then maybe they should be in charge, because they obviously have something that eludes the rest of the human race. I, for one, welcome our lizard overlords.
Yeah, and also our new orange-faced overlord. So, you know, but really, that I don't really have overlords. They're just powerful gangsters who are usually beyond my reckoning, meaning I can't look them up, just like you just mentioned. And everyone who's been listening for this last hour and 45 minutes, they might be wondering, what is the redemption that we're going to get to in the next segment? And you guys can keep wondering, because we already talked this one out during the break.
Subject to change.
Subject to change. Oh, yeah. And we talked it out. And guess what? We'll talk it out again. We get to say all kinds of things that hopefully don't get into the... Who is that famous person who was swearing off the air and then it accidentally got on the air?
Buffalo Bob from Howdy
Really?
Doody. Oh, you mean the Carell role?
Yes, Carell. I'm speaking of someone named Carell happened to be saying all the naughty words that I am mostly not saying tonight. Yeah, exactly. And I have a list of words that I have right here that I can't say. And all day long, during a day where I have a show, which is usually a Monday, I just try not to say those words. Just to get into the habit of it.
Well, don't use the word that I used a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm not going to use that word. I don't even know what that word is. But, you know. But by the way, I want to say for on the air, Lou is one of the people who helped me get to become a Freedom Fiends co-host. And thank you, Lou.
You're very welcome for my service.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to this article here, the fascism, the closing paragraph here. Americans do not like to admit that they live in a system that is most accurately characterized as participatory fascism. They insist that fascism requires death camps, goose-stepping brown shirts, comical yet murderous leaders in funny hats, and other hallmarks of the fascism that operated in Germany and Italy between the world wars. Don't forget mustaches. Mustaches and jackboots. But yes. Fascism takes many forms. If you wish to see the form that it has increasingly taken in the economically advanced countries during the last century, just look around you. Because when you look at it, I think you can send fascism in two different directions, going by Mussolini's definition, being the merger of corporation and state, or marriage of corporation and state. One where the corporations control the government, and then the other, the opposite, where the government controls the corporations. But anyway, we'll be back.
We are the Freedom Fiends.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Your kitties tight.
Love your kitties.
We're going to put a pretty little bow on this with the little redemption in the third act. So you had some ideas for some redemption. What were they, Daryl?
Well, you told me this beautiful story of your new home that you own and the first actual tomatoes that you grew there, and then just taking them right off the vine, putting some salt and pepper on them, and then tasting them like that.
That is just
everyone out there. I mean, you have the chance, just like Lou here, to acquire your own place, unless of course you have a political overlord who's, you know, making sure that you can't own land, can't own your place. But well, you have a chance to own the place and actually taste your own tomatoes, which are hard to grow over here, by the way.
With the amount of yard work and other housework that I do, house owns me. But here's the thing. This is my first home ever, my personal home that I've ever bought. And it's really neat to move in here and start making this mine and doing my little things to it. So anyway, I wanted to plant a really big garden, but at the time of year that I moved in here, it was basically planting season, or a couple days before planting season when I moved in. So the best I was able to do was I bought some tomato plants up at Walmart, and I threw them in the little section behind the garage. It gets pretty good sun. So I'm kind of thinking about what I'm going to do for my garden for next year. I'm in the preparation phase. This year is just getting stuff unpacked and putting stuff together and minor repairs and redecorating, stuff like that. But I went and I planted three tomato plants, and it was really nice is when I get up real close to them, I can smell the tomato plant smell. I don't even have to touch them, but if I do touch them, then I have that tomato plant smell on my hands, and it's actually a really good sweet smell. It's I don't really know how to describe it.
It's called scopolamine. It's that toxin that's in there, and it is really sweet. And that's why you can't eat those leaves. The leaves? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Do you imagine how sick you'd be if you ate the leaves?
Smelling-wise,
of course you weren't going to, because you can't. But the fruit is just fine, and it has only a tiny bit of scopolamine in there. Just a tiny bit.
Well, you make it sound that it's like a poison gas, like it's mustard gas or something like that.
Oh, it is a poison. But it's delicious.
So anyway, I did cut it. And I put some salt and pepper on it, and I buy tomatoes at the store every few days because I do salads and stuff like that. And sometimes I'll just chop up tomatoes and eat them, just chopped up with some salt and pepper, maybe some Italian dressing on there. But anyway, the taste and the flavor of this homegrown tomato was just absolutely mind-boggling, because you don't really get that flavor, that taste out of the store-bought tomatoes. So it was really special to me, and plus it's my tomato. I grew it. I planted that poisonous leaf plant into the ground and watch it grow from a little sprout all the way up to being the out of control monster it needs to be trimmed that it is today.
Michigan.
Yeah.
And not just California. You could in Michigan, Upper Peninsula.
So today, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, in Bear Saskatchewan, I pulled a ripe tomato off of the vine. And what do I have to look forward to tonight? I got a frost warning from the weather app. And it's down to 44 degrees right now. It's going to get down, probably going to get down to 36 tonight. So hopefully my tomato plants don't die. But anyway, if I only got one tomato out of it, it would be the most delicious tomato of the season.
Everyone listening out there, I want you to please savor this victory, and this too can be yours. Just say that.
Hold your tomatoes close to your heart. Let them know that you love them, because they may not be there in the morning if there's frost.
Please put a cold frame over your precious plants, okay? You can. There's technology where in the 21st century, you don't have to let the frost kill your plants, okay? Oh, I almost used an expletive right there. I was getting really frustrated. Like, why are you not using technology? We have plastic and glass and frames and things, you know?
I'm a Luddite. Wait. It's really great to talk to you again. Happy that you finally made it on. I can't wait for you to come back. Thanks for coming on tonight. Thank you for your service. And to all of our people listening out there, thanks for listening. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Lou. Worms.
Worms.